Turning up this next podcast is a great way to whisk yourself away into another world. But when you're in the car, it can't fight sleep. It turns out your only power against sleep is a power nap. So if you're feeling drowsy behind the wheel, pull over for 15 minutes and have one. Let's get towards zero with the TAC. Now, time for the podcast.
Tuesday morning in Melbourne. This is your town. This is your station. This is Waitley on 1116 SEN.
Morning. Good morning. Frantic, breathless footy. We saw it a few times over the Easter weekend. The ending at the MCG yesterday was incredible. Pulsating and frenzied. And you can cut it up and analyse it within an inch of its life, but you really do have to savour it and not take Hawthorn and Geelong for granted. It was true of Port Adelaide and the Sydney Swans as well, and it was equally so for the Giants and Collingwood at the MCG. It's certainly going to fray some nerves throughout the season. I doubt it will ever be entirely predictable, and that's just from the outside. Imagine what it's going to be like from the inside. Nathan Buckley, the Collingwood coach, is with us right from the outset today to assess the Magpie side of things and the overall, where we've been and where we're going and what took place in that final term yesterday. Nathan, welcome back.
Hi, Jared.
Good. Did you watch the end yesterday?
Yeah, I did. It was compelling viewing. You know, I went and had a look for the first part and then got home and sitting on the couch with my boys. And, yeah, it's footy at its best, wasn't it?
What does a coach's eye see in those moments?
Oh, we saw it. It's very similar to what we saw in round one, how organised Hawthorn are, how well structured they are, how they set up the ground in defence, which really sets up their offence and vice versa, and how busy their couple of recruits, Mitchell and O'Meara, are through the middle, which is adding, filling a bit of a gap that they've perceived to have had over the last 18 months or so at contested ball. And a Geelong side that were young, but found a way to stay in the game and fight through in that last quarter. So it was good footy.
It was a weird game, I thought. It felt close even though it wasn't, and then suddenly it was. And yeah, when scores were level with 4 minutes to go, Geelong seemed to have a full sail of momentum.
Yeah, look, you've got to give both of those teams, you know, kudos for the way that they front up against one another. I think there's a huge element of competitiveness in both of them. You see it sort of in a more aggressive sense, I think, with Geelong. And I think there might be a little bit of a personality of the coach as well, but Joel Selwood as the captain really drives that. I mean, Dangerfield with his grunt. You win a contested ball from anywhere, and one of the few blokes that's been able to outgrunt us even, or out-trick a Cyril Rioli that last contest where he just shoved him out of the way and come out quicker than Cyril was even able to out off the ground. So, and then the Hawthorn guys that are just so measured, so prepared. And as Clarko said after the game, the fact that they were able to find some composure late in that quarter, when quite clearly he felt, and they would probably review, that they weren't able to maintain their composure to give those last four goals up. It was exceptional viewing, and I think that's why we love the game so much.
There was such poise from Hawthorn in that last 4 minutes, and the player that took your eye was Isaac Smith in a couple of duels.
Yeah, just a couple of those one-on-ones out in the far wing from the coach's box side, and I think, he's a gun player, has been for a long time. And I just thought that, for the most part of it, as you said, Hawthorn had the upper hand in the arm wrestle. And they seemed to be able to do it without, with great efficiency and with a minimum of physical effort, but that's not necessarily the case. I think they just do it, they make good decisions more often and they do the basics extremely well. And as simple as it is, that's the game of footy.
How much footy beyond your own and beyond what you need to study for next week are you able to take in the early stages of a season?
You're always got your eye on your opponents clearly next couple of weeks, and your opposition and analysis crew will be looking at teams 3 or 4 weeks out. But there are marquee games where you like to get along and just enjoy the experience a little bit. And there's no doubt that that there's certain games that whet the appetite, and you know that you're going to see the best footy that's played currently. So you get along to those, and whilst you want to watch the teams and find what is happening on the field, you do watch it analytically. I actually enjoy just taking half a step back for those games and just be able to soak in the atmosphere and what it is. And remind yourself about what you're a part of as well.
So when Dangerfield, Ablett and Selwood go into the same midfield, is that sort of a moment that you go, that's all right?
Or? Yeah. I don't get caught up too much in that, the story of that. But clearly they were three dominant players yesterday and played out of their skins to keep the Cats in the contest. It's probably equally, you've got Howe who's tagging Selwood and looks like he's getting into him physically, and he's a very smart player. Like, not just all defence, not all offence. Yeah, hasn't got great speed, but he's got a great nous and competitiveness. Finds a way to use his skill set to his optimum. So you're looking at all those players, and I admire that as much as I admire the all out brilliant football ability or the absolute physical acumen and prowess that a Dangerfield has.
You had two traumatic incidents to deal with as a club and as a coach from the weekend. Tim Broomhead was graphically captured, and then Cale Kirby we sort of learnt about as we went. Maybe Kirby first. When did you hear about it?
After our game.
Yep.
So that was... that one came out of the blue. So that was we'd completed review post match with the coaches and the players. The players had headed back to recover, and we were on our way, cleaning up and waiting for downloads of games, and about to head back to the Holden Centre to watch what was left of that game. So hearing about Cale, which had come out of the blue, clearly. He hasn't had any complaints previously, but the situation that we'd heard, the game had been stopped for 40 minutes. He'd collapsed on the field, spoke to Faz, probably 5-10 minutes after hearing about it, and he was 20 metres away from him and said that he just couldn't breathe. I'm struggling to breathe. I can't get up. So the game was stopped. An ambulance was called. It was diagnosed as a atrial fibrillation, so an irregularity in his heartbeat. And since then, Cale's stabilised. He was in the Epworth for a couple of days, a couple of nights. I suppose all the things that happen behind the scenes that people don't realise. So we have a VFL doctor. He communicates with our AFL doctor, who got across there pretty sharply. Our player engagement crew are on that straight away, calling mums and dads and brothers and sisters, anyone else who needs to know, organising trips to hospitals, making sure that Cale and his family are as comfortable as possible, speaking with players and staff to make sure that they're abreast of what's going on, and we're providing all the support to all our people as quickly and as promptly as we can.
And what's the coach's part in that?
Well, the coach's part is to support the player engagement crew to do what they need to do. Contact, to speak to the players in the same sense, but to provide some support around that as much as I possibly can. I suppose we are providing leadership in it. If there's any decisions that need to be made, you've got to have the right people in the room to make decisions. But it was pretty straight up and down. We'd handed Cale across to the experts, who were the nurses and the paramedics, who did a fantastic job. But it was never a, whilst an emergency situation, it was never, you can fear the worst in those circumstances, but Cale was stable for most, through the entire experience. It's just he didn't know what was going on, and you can understand what sort of a shock that may be to a young man.
Have you seen him or spoken? At what point do you see him or speak to him?
Yeah, I'm going to give Cale another call today to see how he is. His family after the initial shock, it settles down. It took a while for the heart to come back into rhythm. And 80% of the time, we're told that it comes back in on its own. He'll come back into the club tomorrow, and we'll, starting with light exercise and do a few more tests. There's a few more tests that he needs to do to find out exactly how and why this occurred. It takes a little bit of time. He won't play this weekend, which is not a consideration at all. But he won't play this weekend. But and it'll be up to Cale to, you know, how he sort of spins out of this to how comfortable he is to resume his career.
And Tim Broomhead?
Yeah.
That's so graphic, as we get one of these every now and then, and the shock of it, the gruesomeness of it, never dulls. Is when it happens in real time, you're in the coach's box. Is first of all, what goes through the coach's box?
Well, when Tim threw his leg out and slapped the ground, it was pretty evident straight away to me that what had happened. So I think we were on it pretty quickly, even before the replays. And it was—it's unfortunate. He's a young bloke who's really trying to push his way through. And this is the humanity, or the humanitarian part of it. The fact that he's a young man who's struggled to consolidate his spot in the AFL, who's still attempting to prove his worth, and to maximise his talent. He's put a heap of work in. He's taken some time to work out what the CAPE is all about, and he was probably ready to really find out whether he was going to be able to make the grade or not. We still hope that he gets that opportunity, clearly, but in that one moment, it's taken away from him for the best part of 12 months. So it's a shocking thing to happen to a young man, and it's not what you expect to be walking off the football field with. You know you're going to get bumps and bruises, and you're going to be tested and challenged and mentally and emotionally and physically, poked and prodded, and where are the weak spots, and where are you going to have to stand up, and where are you going to have to toughen up. But when your leg snaps, you can't really do a great deal about that once it's done. So it was very disappointing for him, for us. Brodie Grundy's one of his best mates, probably his best mate, and Brodie's stood up really well, mentally and emotionally, for the rest of the day to be able to play the type of game that he played. We all feel for Tim, and we're all just sort of gathered around him. And once again, the player engagement boys they had a busier night than they might have anticipated.
So have you seen Tim since?
No, I haven't seen Broomy. He's in hospital for a couple more days. But speaking to him on the night, the whistle didn't work. He wasn't happy with the whistle. So he felt most of it for a fair deal of the time. And you actually speak to the young man who's feels like his dream's shattered. So it's pretty hard conversation to have. But he's a good kid, and we'll support him and love to see him. Get another opportunity, like to actually get a clean go at it. But the life's not fair, and we find that we're reminded of that constantly, aren't we?
We are. The team absorbed it well, as you point out. Brody's a close friend of his, and he played extremely well. I don't suppose you can ever be sure how a group that's early in the game, how a group will absorb such a moment.
No, and I suppose it speaks to. It speaks to how tight our group is, and how much they care for one another, to be honest. I think we responded well as a unit after last week. We were disappointed with that. And I thought the leaders really set the tone in that regard. But I think that it is a bit of a fantasy existence when you play a game of footy. Nothing else matters outside of the white line, and even some of the things that happen inside of the white line, they're just moved on from and forgotten for that point in time, because there's more important things to focus on. And that's the lot of a professional sports person, especially in team sport, where if you drop your guard, well, then you're letting so many other people down that have put a great deal of work in. So, Yeah, I suppose you don't know how that you're going to respond, but the fact is that you've playing a team sport as a young man and in Australian culture and pushing your way through and being involved in it for 5, 10, 15, 20 years plus, there's only one way to react, and that is to go and do your job and not let your team down as much as you possibly can. So it was a strong response to last week, given the circumstances of the game. And with Tim, it was encouraging to see that there wasn't going to be a great deal that was going to slow us down from making a stand as a team and as a unit. And that was a positive part of the weekend.
This Tuesday morning, Nathan Buckley in the studio to start the program at 21 minutes past nine. You've got all the wrong injuries in all the same places, Nathan, at the moment. It feels like you haven't got great choices up front.
No, we've lost a few in the front of the ground. Jordan DeGoey and Jamie Elliott will play VFL this week, so they'll start to push back, and they've actually had a decent block of training, so whether it's 1 or 2 weeks down there, we'll assess based on what we see. Daniel Wells is still a couple away. Darcy's going to be a little bit of time, 3 or 4 weeks, depending on how he comes up clinically. But we'll have Mason Cox and Ben Reid available this weekend. And they'll definitely provide a little bit of structure that we missed last week. But yeah, we're going through the standard ins and outs that happen, but nothing seems to be standard with us.
It's early in the year to be cobbling, isn't it? So you've got all the best laid plans of how you want to play and what you want it to look like, and already in round two, you were just cobbling to put something together.
Yeah, in some sense, in some parts of the game, but we still believe you don't prepare to play with 22 players in over 22 rounds. You prepare to a depth of your squad, and there are some green elements in every list that aren't going to help you in the season that you're in, but you are preparing for growth down the track. We have an element of that, but we also have some depth. And we've got some players there that are licking their lips for opportunity, and they're really clear on their roles and where they can impact when they get those senior opportunities, and we're looking forward to testing that.
Scott Pendlebury in the ruck.
Yep, you enjoyed it, Pendles. We planned initially to ruck Brody as long as we possibly could. Darcy would come in and do centre bounces when Brody was off, and Pendles would assume ruck duties around the ground. He gave a free kick away at a D50 stoppage, which was not the plan. But apart from that, it actually worked pretty well for us. Our clearance differential was positive when Pendles was in the ruck and with an extra midfield runner through the midfield.
So what is the logic behind it?
Oh, the logic behind it is you work with what you've got. And we wanted to maintain some semblance of a forward structure with our only tall on the field in the front half. And having said that, when Darcy went off, pretty much with about 8 or 9 minutes to go in the second quarter, we played without what you would call a legitimate tall forward. I think we had a couple of 6-1ers, 6-2ers there that were playing as, in our traditional, our aerial roles. Davis's ability to come off and mock, Finlayson's ability to come off, they hurt us gradually as the game wore on, and ultimately that was our inability to get the ball to ground in the last quarter was what cost us the game. And I thought Ben Crocker, Will Hoskin-Elliott, Jaden Stevenson, not guys that you've known as great aerialists, although Will has done it for a long period of time. I thought their effort to bring the ball to ground for the most part was actually really really encouraging.
So Carlton and Collingwood Friday night, both winless.
Yep.
How urgent does that feel to make sure that you actually get a win and get your season underway?
Yeah, well, our season clearly is underway, and we're really. There's a lot of positives that came out of our performance last week. So our intent is to roll that over and to bring the same sort of energy application to task and to roll that we saw last weekend, and to bring it against another opponent. There is the Carlton Collingwood aspect of it, and the fact that there's been a strong rivalry there for a number of years, and Carlton have actually performed very well against us in recent years. So this fixture is one that that we have to remedy, from previous seasons, and it's definitely one that takes on a fair bit of importance for us and for them. I dare say that was going to be the case regardless of what happened in the first two rounds. So we're not getting caught up in the external narrative. We've got to make sure that we look after our part of the bargain, and we're really looking forward to Friday night.
Does Carlton and Collingwood need to remain relevant to both clubs? Is there an effort within the clubs to make sure that they understand the history of it and why it's a little bit apart?
Yeah, I think so. I think as generations go on, it sort of moves you a little bit further away from the 70s. It moves you a little bit further away from foundation and how this all came about, and where the animosity and the bad blood actually exists. So you sort of do move further away from it, but there's an element of a huge element of our army that have been around long enough to have felt all of that. And the wounds are deep, and the hurt is real. So we understand that, and as an organisation, the leadership of the organisation, we understand what that looks like and feels like. But we also have a very real and clear picture of what we can do to make sure that we honour the Collingwood aspect of that, and that's by playing our best football. So that's our challenge every week. But trying to stay relevant is and have that rivalry be relevant is probably more about what happens in the present, as we saw yesterday. That rivalry is alive and well because they're both sides that are very competitive, and they seem to have really close games on that fixture every year. So it's there's a little bit of work for Collingwood and Carlton to do to return that relevance into the present time, and Friday night might be a good start.
More broadly, it was hard not to be taken by Port Adelaide on the weekend. Mm. Are you a subscriber to Port's credentials?
Absolutely. Very strong side. They've from bouncing back originally with Ken and then dropping away for a little bit. We see them as a very strong contested ball side with a really strong defensive structure. To be able to go to Sydney in round one last year and win that game when they were unheralded and unexpected to. And then, the comments of Jared McVeigh coming into this game around wanting to make the SCG a fortress, having to right the wrong of losing that game to them, and Sydney being up and about, and having the perception of wanting to start this season a little bit strongly, more strongly compared to last year, and not wanting to get in a hole again. It was a really strong performance. I think it speaks to the grunt and the will to win that side has, and they've got some class still to come back. And I think they'll be a handful.
Did you see any of Tom Lynch on the weekend?
Yes. Yeah. They were clearly playing against Carlton, so I watched most of that game.
What is he in your eyes?
No, he's a pretty good footballer.
Yep. Is he one of the great forwards in waiting?
He could well be, yeah.
8 goals was a pretty good turn.
I enjoyed it. Did you enjoy it?
Oh, I loved it.
He can play, can't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
What are we looking for here?
Do you want to say anything?
Yeah. No, it's a good footballer. Yep. Great performance.
Do you want him?
And Gold Coast are looking good.
Yep. Do you want him?
Do I want him?
Yep.
I don't think that there's many clubs that would say that they can't do with a marking tall forward. And he's a very, very aerobic, hard-running tall forward as well. So they don't, there's not going to be few. They don't grow on trees. So I reckon he will be well sought after. The Gold Coast have started pretty well. Stewie Jew looks like he's got them organised, and and playing fairly aggressive footy, 92 tackles on the weekend. So he's a Gold Coast player.
The coach's interaction with public, walking down aisles and whatnot, what have you been your experiences there?
I reckon I might have cop a spray from the same bloke in right. the same spot. No, I dare say that those seats are well held, as all the seats in Adelaide Oval would be. But I got to say that coming down at Adelaide Oval is the place that I have copped the most grief. So I'm back there in a week and a half. So I look forward to saying g'day to a few old faces. But it's a very emotive game. And when someone has something to say in that forum, I can understand where Dimmer's response came from. And it was fairly measured. There wasn't much in it. But at the same time, there was an element of aggression in it, and there's an element of aggression in everything that we do. We're wearing our hearts on our sleeves. We're fully invested in what's going on. We're fully invested in our team, in the result, in the moment. And I'd like to think that you don't need to fully be separated from the crowd, and that maybe that this incident is not as big as it's been made out to be, but if it ever got physical, then that would be a poor look for the football world.
And it's sort of entirely on you, the coach, to walk on by, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. Got to be the
fair or not.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. Got to be the better man. Got to be the person who absorbs it all. But at the same time, senior coaches absorb a fair bit, not all of it visible to viewers or not all of it that people are aware of what you do absorb as a senior coach, and everyone has their breaking point, but somehow we're supposed to be these martyrs that don't feel, that don't have a weak moment, that aren't human. And just find the best way every time. That's not what it is. We are not infallible. We will have our moments, and some of them will be caught on camera.
And this, well, we met on Wednesday last week. The cricket was in full flurry. Most of it is now played out at a series of tearful press conferences. How have you looked in on that just most dramatic conclusion to a week in cricket?
Yeah, and I suppose I was talking to my wife about this late last week, and her comment was those poor cricketers getting, hauled over hot coals. Yeah, they made a mistake. But what about how hard everyone's going at them? What about the position that they've been put in and that their family have been put in and exposed to? And the answer is, the answer is really easy for that. And we'll go, well, don't make the mistake in the first place, or don't stoop to the levels that you stoop to in the first place. But there is an element of when there's blood in the water, the sharks just come at you. And I think this has been a circumstance for that. I think there's an element of cynicism that we view it with as well, that a lot of people view it with. They go, okay, well, he's crying, so at least he feels it in some sense. Whereas if he was a stoic type and held it all in and wasn't as emotional, well, then that'd be viewed as, oh, he doesn't care. So I don't think that we have a lot of understanding for the human side of that, and the fact that people will make blues and they do take it on the chin and they will take responsibility and accept their role in it. And even with David Warner, I don't know the blow by blow. I don't know the facts, but he clearly hasn't been as thrown himself on a sword hard enough for a lot of people. And it must be a tough position for him to be in.
It's been torturous for them, and that's been before our very eyes.
Yeah, I mean, there's still a party who would just do the right thing first. Don't make poor decisions, and you don't have to face the consequences. But the consequences that you have to face as a public figure, They're huge. They're exponential compared to what they may have been 20 years ago, 40 years ago, 60 years ago.
Yeah, the intensity of it was really been something. So the one stray one that I wanted to ask was, that's been asked, is Alex Fasolo. Where's he in you? How close is he?
Yeah, so Faz has played, six quarters of really strong footy, last six quarters. He didn't do a lot of training with balls in hand with his shoulder. But he's running fit, really running fit. Faz will have his opportunities, there's no doubt. He and Jared Blair were pulled from the VFL game at halftime on Saturday. Chris Mayne will be fit, as I said, Reed and Cox. So we've got a few guys that are available for selection that weren't available last weekend, and we'll find the best fit for this week.
We'll see you on Friday night. Thanks
Cheers.
For coming in.
Thanks, Jared.
Nathan Buckley, the Collingwood coach, he'll be with us each and every week on 11:16 SEN.